Have you ever walked into a store and felt like, okay, if I had a store, this is exactly what it would look like? That is what happened to me when I walked into Catbird, this beautiful little shop in Williamsburg, New York. They are known around the world for these beautiful, delicate gold stacking rings that they make. Their collection of jewelry is really simple and delicate, and it's the kind of jewelry that you put on and you never take off. You can go swimming in it, you can wear it to a wedding, and all of the jewelry that they make, these delicate pieces made with recycled gold or fair mined from scale mining communities, are really special. They also have this foundation called the Catbird Foundation, which is tied to the ethos of their brand, which is a commitment to making and doing good things. So they donate a percentage of their sales to nonprofit organizations that align with their belief in equality and helping others. They're really committed to serving communities in need all over the world. So whether you go to their store or their gorgeous website, catbirdnyc.com, you're entering a world of beautiful things made by really good people. Whether you're getting a simple birthday present or you're proposing, catbirdnyc.com, informal luxury.
Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK. Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Hey everyone, new episodes of Little Known Facts drop every Monday and you can find them on your favorite podcast provider. Also, if you go to the website, littleknownfactspodcast.com, you'll find behind the scenes photos, videos, and interviews and lots more on the gallery page. And if you are loving these intimate, candid conversations with all the artists who come on the show, please head over to the contributions page. I depend on these donations to continue to bring you these interviews every week. So if you love the show, please donate. Little known fact about my guest today, she may be the most reluctant star you will ever meet, but she is also the most gifted. Welcome, Allison Janney.
A-OK. A-OK.
Hey, everyone. My guest today is Allison Janney. Her Broadway credits include 6 Degrees of Separation, 9 to 5, A View from the Bridge, and Present Laughter. Of her many films, some standouts include American Beauty, Drop Dead Gorgeous, Primary Colors, The Hours, Juno, Hairspray, Finding Nemo, Big Night, The Help, Margaret, The Girl on the Train, Spy, and many more. She is known worldwide from her performance as C.J. Craig on The West Wing, for which she was awarded 4 Emmys, and more recently as Margaret Scully on Masters of Sex, for which she also won an Emmy, and Bonnie Plunkett on the CBS sitcom Moms, for which she has won 2 Emmys so far. She has won SAG Awards, Golden Globes, and every award you can get for being a genius actress. And
Except one.
Oh, which one is that?
The Oscar.
But haven't you heard? They're not doing those anymore.
Oh, really?
No, they're so, those are so last year.
Did I just screw up your whole intro and you have to do it over again?
Are you kidding?
Okay, good.
She's won SAG Awards, Golden Globes, and every award you can get for being a genius actress and has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. She is a passionate advocate for many organizations, but has played a huge role in raising awareness for Planned Parenthood, our nation's veterans, and animal rights. Welcome. Oh my God, what is your name?
Allison Janney.
Slate your name?
Allison Janney.
Can you turn right? I need a profile.
Oh, the other right.
Welcome, Allison Janney, to the podcast.
Alana Levine, at long last, I am sitting across from you. I have listened to every single podcast up until I started rehearsals for Six Degrees, and you're very good at this.
Well, you are a very good friend for listening to every episode, but I'm a little concerned that something happened, that contractually you didn't get it in fine print, that you get time to listen to Little Known Facts during rehearsal.
Yeah, no, all I could do is I have this app called Rehearsal App, and I put all the other people's lines and then leave a blank space for mine. So that's what I'd have in my car instead of your wonderful podcast. I would listen to myself, do everyone else's lines, and then leave a space for me to do my line. So, because I had to memorize these lines. John Benjamin Hickey, who stars in Six Degrees of Separation with me, we started learning our lines in October.
Of 2003. In hopes that in 2017 you would do the play.
Exactly. We were terrified with our brains getting just a little older that we wouldn't be able to memorize those lines and hold them, you know. And so we started early, and so I couldn't
And
listen
thus
to the podcast.
My podcast listens have gone down a little bit, but you'll be back. What's really fascinating about you saying that is when I think of you, one of the things I prided myself on about you was that you were like a sponge when it came to learning lines. Because I don't know that listeners know this, but Allison holds the title of the guest I've known the longest on this podcast.
Are you
which
serious?
Is a really
I just
amazing
got chills.
Yes.
I love...
Yes. And one of the times that I stayed with you in LA was when you were on the West Wing. And I remember you would come home with like 7,000 pages of lines, and we'd have a meal, and then I'd go, I don't know, watch an episode of Ed. Then I would come out and I'd be like, do you want me to run lines with you? And you'd be like, okay. And you knew all of them is really the point of that very long story. So you once had a muscle for memory, for line memorization.
I feel like I've used up my memorizing chip.
The
like
quote
it's
is
like
done.
The quote is done. And it's like, Matt's like, no, we're not doing anymore. We're
smoking.
We're on, yeah, it's
smoking. It's like it got wet.
And short circuiting. And I was so terrified. I had so much stage fright about going up on lines
yes,
on Broadway.
Because like, it's a terrible
God.
Thing to do.
Oh,
it's,
my God.
It's not a great thing.
No, it's not.
Do you remember, speaking of Ed, that one of the things that we used to do is
when we used to play acting coaches, we would watch TV shows, Ed or whatever, Smash, whatever show we were watching, and we would pretend we were the coaches of whatever actor we chose to
the
be the coach
cast.
Of, the principal cast. And we would freeze frame and go, yes, in that moment, I thought that I told her
do you see what I have Julie Bowen do in America? Laugh so hard, like our jaws would hurt so much because we thought this was the most hysterical thing on the planet.
It truly was. And I wish we'd had pointers, those electronic pointers to just look and say, in that moment, you see there, see, I instructed her to lift her coffee cup up to her lips and not take a sip. Instead, look out the window. Do you see what that, you know?
Notice Tom Cavanaugh. Notice how he's looking.
Literally one of my favorite games. I've never been able to recreate it with anybody else. And I can't wait till we are reunited in our dotage.
Anyway, that's a little known fact. You were born in Boston.
I was. I was born in Boston. My father was going to Harvard Business School. And I was there.
Just dropped that
just
in there, didn't
that
you?
In there. And I was born there on November 19th in 1999.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. and then soon after my dad graduated from there, they moved us to Cincinnati, Ohio, and then from Cincinnati to Dayton, Ohio, where I spent my formative years.
And your father ended up doing what professionally?
Well, he went into his family business, which was commercial real estate. My father is such an artist, though. He plays jazz piano and guitar, and he's an artist. And he, you know, back then you didn't go after that sort of career.
That's right.
And he went into business. He went to business school. He knew he had to make a, you know, living. He got married when my mom and dad were like 20 and 21 when they got married, and he went into business. But that's not where his passion and his heart is. It's definitely in the arts and sailing. And my father, I swear, I think he learned to play the piano so he wouldn't have to talk to anybody.
Interesting.
It's such a great way to be part of the party and but not have to, you know, talk to anyone. You can kind of be by yourself and play your music and entertain people. But My dad does not love to sit and chit-chat. You know, he's not a chit-chatter.
I remember your mom is more social.
Yes, she's very social.
Macy
Janney is, and she used to be an actress. She went to Bennington College in Vermont, like a 2-year college, majored in dance, you know. And
this is like a Wendy Wasserstein play unfolding right in front of my eyes. Yes.
And she
what's your dad's name?
Jervis.
Right.
Jerv
so Janney. Macy and Jervis.
Macy and Jerv.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, they met while it was kind of a cute story actually, because my mother came to New York to go to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. And while she was here, she was set up on a blind date. My father was writing copy for an advertising agency called Compton, I think it was. They went on a blind date, and my mother wouldn't answer the door because she had a big zit on her chin, and she decided she didn't want to go out because who wants to go out with a big zit on your chin? And my father sat on the stairwell outside of her apartment and drew a cartoon of her sitting in her apartment drinking a bottle of wine and she said she had to study or something, and he drew this cartoon of her drinking a bottle of wine, and the wine gets emptier and emptier and emptier, and then she just gets drunk and can't study anymore, and he says, why not just come to dinner with me? So she went out to dinner with him, and then I don't know if they made this up, but he forgot his wallet, so my mother had to pay for the dinner, and then it was from there
it was love.
And I guess, I hope it was love.
It was marriage.
It was marriage and 3 babies. Boom, boom, boom. Right.
Where are
in
you
row.
In the birth order?
In the middle. We're all 18 months apart. My older brother, Jay, my younger brother, Hal, is no longer with us. He passed in 2011. But Jay is up in, he would be mad if I told anyone where he was. So I'm not going to say.
But isn't it 423 North Road, Sayville?
My brother could not be more opposite of who I am. We could not have more completely different lives, and I sometimes envy his, and I have no doubt he never envies mine.
Right.
He likes to be private and quiet, does not like a lot of noise, doesn't like... He came out for my star ceremony in L.A., which I was so grateful that he did. All my family came out, but he was overwhelmed at he was like, I don't know how you do it. It's just... It's crazy.
So there's Jay, there's you, there's Hal, there's Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah.
And your parents were artistic and lovers of the arts and supportive of your passion for the arts?
Well, they definitely didn't dissuade me from going into a career in the arts, but they kind of let us pick our own paths, didn't try to steer us one way or the other. They strongly suggested I might think about getting a job when I was in New York, and they were generous with us in terms of making sure we had a place to live. I feel very fortunate that they made sure my rent was paid. You know,
right.
They gave me that, which was
right.
Such an unbelievable gift as a struggling artist. God only knows what I would have done if I didn't have that. And I had to have a job to pay for my rent. I feel very fortunate and sheepish about my my early leg up, at least financially. It was incredible to have that support from them. And then I feel so incredibly grateful that I'm able to pay them back at this point and take care of them the way they took care of me. So it's kind of lovely. But they've come to see me in every single play I've done. Every single thing I've done, they've been there.
You were passionate about skating as a young girl. Did you skate all the time?
Well, I was, because my father was in commercial real estate, he owned a building that housed an ice skating rink. So I had access to all the ice time I wanted. So I thought, why not? I'm going to be a figure skater. And
right.
Thankfully, my mother, who was a dancer, enrolled me in classes at the Dayton Ballet Company. And I took modern dance and ballet. And I think that was so great. She did that for me, being 6 feet tall. So I stand up straight.
You were 6 feet tall when you were born.
I know.
Right?
I've
you
always
came
been out of the room 6 feet
were
tall.
You such a tall baby.
God, it was hard to be this tall, but
I know.
But I'm grateful that I took the ballet classes because it made me feel I consider myself very graceful. And
I think we all do.
No, oh, thank you.
You're
so
welcome.
And so the ice, being on ice, I fell in love with being on the ice. And I had a coach, and I had dreams of going to the Olympics. And ultimately, I had that accident where I went through a play class window at a big party for parents and kids. And
you were 17 when that happened.
I was 17, and I don't know if I want to tell that whole story. Do I want to tell that whole story?
Well, it's really sad. this is like an inspiring podcast where we try to make people.
It was an accident. I went through a play class window, and it cut short my skating career, and I think someone may have been looking after me because I don't, you know, skating is an acrobatic sport, and I could not get this 6 foot tall frame around three revolutions in the air. I could do two double jumps, a double flip and a double sow cow.
You probably could have done like beautiful ice dancing.
See, Torval and Dean.
Yeah.
You could have been a Vegas act. Yeah, well, that too. I'd have to be a little, well, I'm not going to go that. I keep spinning into dark places.
Remember, this is like, this the is idea of the up, show is like for people to be like, God, my day's really hard. I'm going to listen to Little Known Facts to feel better. Right? Like think of us as the USO. We're here to make the troops
make
feel
the
better.
Make the troops feel better. Okay, so I'm good. This is going to be hard for me because my little mind goes down dark places really quickly.
Do you
quickly.
Know what? I think people would be really happy to know that because all of ours do.
So how about that I started a meditation course today? I'm learning to meditate.
Do you want to share with us what like the first couple of steps are?
Not talking. So maybe we could just do that for 20 minutes here. Yeah. Just be quiet and meditate.
We're going to do some mindful podcasting. Number one with a bullet. You started meditation this morning.
Yes, because I need to find some space in my head with everything that's going on. And before I go on stage sometimes, I just need to – I'm having trouble sleeping because I've got so many things in my head and so many commitments that I have to do in the day before the play. And I'm having trouble sleeping, so I'm trying to find a way to quiet my mind. And I finally have decided I can no longer talk about doing meditation. I'm going to take a class in it. So I was given my mantra today, which I'm not allowed to tell you. I have to keep it for myself. In some ways, when I think about it, acting is the most meditative experience that I have in my life because when you're on a Broadway stage, if you're not in that moment, you are going to miss the next one.
Right.
If you're like in that moment, you go, oh, they laughed at that one. What did I do different? And then you're like, oh, God, you have to be present.
Right.
It's not a very relaxing presentness,
right.
But it is, you have to be present.
Right. It's high energy.
Moment. High energy in the moment. Energy.
Well, so you need to find that off stage.
Yes. Exactly.
Which is not easy to do when it's not scripted and it isn't all kind of laid out for you in some way.
I've started that journey and hopefully I will.
All right. Well, I hope you will check back in with us because this is your first day. You seem really relaxed to me.
I do?
Yeah.
Well, it's because I'm with you and I know you and I love you.
Yes.
And I feel very comfortable here.
Well, you should probably just stay in here. Maybe that's the answer.
We're locked in here, aren't we? You're never letting me out of here.
It's like the last episode of Seinfeld. I have a question for you. When you had that traumatic thing happen where you walked through a plate glass sliding door, cut tendons, you're bleeding, you're hospitalized.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it changes the course of your life in so many ways. Were you off to college before that happened?
Yeah, it was right after I just graduated from high school.
Right.
And I was going to go to Kenyon College, and I had to miss my first year at Kenyon because I was in the hospital for 3 months.
So you missed a whole year of school?
Mm-hmm. We decided not to go in the middle. Could have started in January, but I said, let me just take a year off.
So you get to Kenyon,
mm-hmm.
And are you a theater major?
I don't know what I'm going to be. I mean, I know that I've enjoyed doing theater and I love it.
You did it in high school?
I did it in high school. What's up to in between high school and college?
Nothing. There's summer
I
camp.
Did it. Yeah. And so when I went to college, I thought maybe I might be a psychology major or philosophy. Those kind of appealed to me. But then I just fell into doing plays, and I loved the community there in the theater, and I fell in love with those people, and I loved the man, Tom Turgeon and Harlene Marley, these two teachers I had there who loved, you know, when you meet people who are passionate about what they do and teach, it's kind of infectious, and they made me want to be in that department. So that's why I went there. And then my freshman year, of course, they'd built this beautiful new theater, the Bolton Theater at Kenyon College, and it was a thrust stage. And to christen it, they invited Paul Newman, who was a graduate of Kenyon College, to direct the first play in the new theater. And that was a play that Michael Christopher wrote, who won the Pulitzer Prize for his play Shadowbox back in 1980-something. And I got myself cast in that production. Didn't have to audition, really. I just had to, well, my audition was standing up on the stage and telling Paul Newman a story about myself.
He said, hey, I'm Paul.
Well, I mean, you know, we all were prepped beforehand, yes. Knowing you're going to go in and stand on this other stage, the Hill Theater, the other little theater there, and you're going to say your name and tell a story about yourself.
Did you prepare it or did something just come to mind?
Oh, no, I prepared it. I'm not good thinking on my feet. I'm not a terrible improver, so I thought of a story that would appeal to Paul Newman. I knew he was a race car driver, and I thought, well, I just got a brand new Scirocco for my birth. My grandmother gave me a car for graduating from high school, and a Scirocco, God, oh my God, I thought I was the coolest thing. It was a navy blue Scirocco. And so I talked about my new car and how fast I could get from Dayton, Ohio to, you know, Gambier, Ohio. And I said, you know, usually most people it takes 2.5 hours, but I can get there in 1 hour and 45 minutes because I take exit, da 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 da, and I punch it on this, you know, and I just told this whole story about how I would get to college faster than anyone else. I always think that that's why he cast me, but it was probably had more to do with my look than anything else, because the play took place in the 40s and we were cheerleaders of a foot race thing. It was a strange, wonderful play, but so that's probably why I got cast more than.
I want to know, what were you like as a kid?
I just went to a reunion. They gave me an alumni award at Hotchkiss School, where I went in Lakeville, Connecticut.
You went to boarding school?
Where my grandfather went, my father went, my brothers went. So they sent me there too.
And at what age?
At, you know, 11th grade. How old are you in 11th grade?
52.
52.
I don't know, like 16?
I guess, yeah. Oh my God, it was terrifying.
You, in the middle of high school, for your last 2 years of high school, you go to boarding school.
I go to boarding school, yeah.
Is that normal to start that late?
I don't think so, but Hotchkiss had just turned co-ed. And,
okay, so you could go.
My brother was there, so I could go, and I think that's just what my father did, what his father did, and I think they just thought that's what their kids should do, to send them to boarding school. And I just cried the first 2 days when my mom left me at boarding school. I just felt abandoned, alone. I was so sad. I just cried. My mother, of course, left notes everywhere in my dorm room to cheer me up, you know, but of course, every time I found one, I would just burst into tears. And then once I got over that, it ended up being, you know, I had fun. I had a great time there, and I did plays there, and it was my first adult experience, really. And it was, I felt that I was not ready for it. But I've always felt that way in life, because going back to my birth, I was induced, because I was born November 19th, and it was right around Thanksgiving. And I think my mother's doctor didn't want to have his Thanksgiving holiday ruined, so he...
You're like, I'm not quite cooked.
So as a result, is it crazy that I think that I'm always, like, putting my heels in the ground when someone says, you're going to do this? I'm like, no.
You're not inducing
me.
I'm not ready.
I'm not going there. Don't put me... I don't want to go to boarding school. I'm not going to New York. I seriously have been dragged everywhere in my life. Even coming to New York. You know, Joanne Woodward, Paul Newman's wife, lovely Joanne Woodward, she said, you're coming to the Neighborhood Playhouse to study acting. I'm like, I'm not sure. A friend back in those days in New York said, Allison, you're going to be successful in spite of yourself. I wasn't really ambitious. I didn't really think that. Like, I remember getting a call from Meg Simon. She's called me because she had seen my final scene at the Playhouse. You know, you do scenes and people come to see you and hopefully you get cast or get an agent. And she called me in for something and I never called her back.
She's very upset about that.
I know she, but just the fact that she called, I was like, great. I always wanted to be on the verge of, like I've got that call. I'm going to make it. I've got that, you know. But
all right, so let's distill this down.
Yeah,
I guess you must have loved acting.
I did.
I don't mean to put words on your mouth.
No, I didn't. I love skating. I mean, going back to the skating thing, my mother said you were the most determined little girl. Just absolutely determined to not fail at things, to be very competitive. It's awful. I'm the one in the family who throws the Monopoly board, you know, throw the ping pong paddle, you know, just disproportionately angry. It's really, it's not something I'm proud of because it's...
But your anger drives you.
I think it does a little bit. There's a little, and you know, back to your thing about memorizing lines in front of, during West Wing, I didn't want to stand up there and be publicly humiliated, you know, in front of when they're rolling cameras and I mess up my lines. It's like, no, I will not. I was that determination not to lose in that game of
now,
learning.
Now, on that show, was there someone that you had in your own mind an ongoing competition with?
No, it was only in my, it was a competition with myself, really, and a competition to not have, because on West Wing, they had, not only did I have a script supervisor who's in charge of continuity and things like that, they had a, someone who was in charge of just looking at the script and making sure every and, if, or but was said. You could not change one
syllable. So those are not apocryphal stories. That's really true about Aaron.
That is true. Mm-hmm. And my goal was to never let her get up out of her seat. Because as an actor, I don't like being, you know, you missed this word,
right.
And it makes me so angry. It gets me in my head, and then I can't do my work. So I knew that the only way I was going to succeed in this role of CJ and get was to really know my lines backwards and forwards, so no one could mess with me and come up and say, "Oh, you missed that," and that was my game I played with myself in my own head. I would unravel quickly if someone started picking at my performance.
Sure.
And I was going to say also about memorizing lines that Mary Catherine Garrison, do you know her?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I worked with her on this movie called How to Deal, she actually showed me how she memorized Shakespeare, which was to write the first letter of each word down on a piece of paper. And if your line is "Hi there," it would be HT. So you would do that with every single one of your lines. So you have, what you're looking at is like, looks like hieroglyphics, but for some reason that would help cement the lines in my head. And I would not have any extraneous line. I would know, oh, that was an HT, and the letters would somehow, she gave that to me, and people have attributed that to my own special technique. But
do you know that movie, A Beautiful Mind?
Yeah.
I'm picturing Russell Crowe's brain. Like inside, you would just have all these little letters floating in your head.
Yeah, but sometimes the letters would spell out things, which would even help you know for certain what your line was. And it's such a great technique. And I've tried to teach it to other people, and I hope it's helped them because it really helps me.
You should do a course like an Alice and Jenny. You know how like on Facebook, there's like Masterclass with David Mamet, which are those real? I don't know if that's a real
thing
or not.
I know, I've seen those all. Like,
I've taken
up.
I'm taking them.
Well, I like wonder about that. Like maybe I could do that. You know, Juliana Margulies is doing one, and she told me what she's doing, her course. And I want to take her, every student should take her course, because she's teaching a class in how to protect yourself as an actor on a set. You have so many people.
Physically?
No, just mentally. When you have work to do and people are coming up and poking at you and trying to have conversations, like, you know, you're preparing for a scene and maybe it's a sad scene and you're maybe
thinking about things. Right, you've got your falsetto soundtrack going.
Yeah, whatever you do to get in, and someone comes up and goes, "Hey, are you okay? What's going on?" It always amazes me how little a lot of people on film sets or in TV that don't know what actors go through to do their work. And so she's teaching a class.
You seem upset.
Are
you okay?
No.
Allison seems really upset.
Like, I am working. Yes. Did you read the scene I'm about to do? My mother just died. I have to talk about that. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, okay, well, you cheer up. What's going on? You know, it's like, I would do some scenes. I'm not going to say
Did you want
show.
The egg sandwich? Do you want it in a tortilla?
Leave it alone. Like one time I was doing a scene and right off camera was somebody who was taking a nap. I was just like, oh my gosh.
That's hurting
and
my
feelings.
And
I said, excuse me, can we cover a minute? And I didn't want to say it in front of everyone, but I walked over to this person. I said, excuse me, can you take your nap? Maybe not. Right.
In my eyeline.
In my eyeline. Or just things like that. I don't know.
But I can just imagine you, who's so sweet and doesn't want to hurt, like stuttering like a crazy person. I'm so sorry to bother you. I'm not sure you're aware. It's a Holocaust story. And if you could just take your nap. I'm sorry.
Or get off your Game Boy. Please
so
play
sorry.
Somewhere else. We go. It's very.
No, that's a great score. I'm just
oh
so
my
sorry.
God.
I know. It's complicated.
It is. And some people, there are some people, actors who don't need, like, Meryl Streep, when I did the hours with her, she had to do this scene where she had just look at this dish that her lover had used to make all the time, and he's dead now, and I'm supposed to be holding it, and she looks at it and bursts into tears, and I'm off camera. And I'm like, you know, I think I should have something to hold so she can look at it. And I'm like trying to find something. I said, she doesn't seem like someone who would be as, like, I need more than she does. Like,
mm-hmm.
I said, do you want me to hold? She said, right. No, I don't need anything. Just forget it. You know, and I think she could act to anything, like an ex.
Oh, so can you talk about that? What did she do?
She's just someone who knows what she's doing. She's very confident about herself. And I mean, I'm sure Meryl has got to have some, you know, moments where she doesn't like what she's doing and doubts herself because she's human. But to me, just watching her, she just knows what buttons to push in or what she had done the work before. And
she didn't need the roast on the plate.
She didn't need the roast on the plate to look at. And I was like, I didn't have to be the roast, but do you want something in my hand so you're not just looking at me pretending to hold something, and she didn't need that. And I was like, oh God, I wish I could be like that, but I need something to look at. I find it so weird, the acting. Like, I wish I had more control over my own technique, because I don't, especially emotionally, it just, what comes out, comes out. I'm on a Broadway stage. Every night's different. There are moments, there's a scene where some nights I cry, some nights I'm not crying, but I'm angry. I hate feeling, but I do this to myself. If I don't reach a certain emotional pitch, I feel like I've lost a patient on an operating table.
Right.
That I've done a disservice to the play. And I hate that feeling. And to be able to just trust yourself and let whatever happens happen. And, you know, someone's phone ringing in the, you know, second row, or someone asleep in the second row, you know, whatever.
Same guy from your eyeline.
Yeah, my eyeline. Exactly. He's following me all over. He's just a stalker, my napping stalker.
But it's different when you're on stage, obviously. There is a little more, I don't know, poetic license emotionally, mm-hmm. because I remember when we were both in Broadway plays at the same time, and I had to cry in Ballyhoo, and I would talk to you about it all the time, and you were like, I know, like I have to change up my prep because it's not working anymore. Like, we would talk a lot about how to get ourselves worked up into this emotional state. And
What did you learn?
I mean, for me, music has always been a very powerful tool to get myself into an emotional state. Mm-hmm. And what I also learned is that whether there are real tears or not, the audience doesn't care.
Really?
And that afterwards, when I would see them at the stage door, mm-hmm. on nights that I cried and nights that there weren't actual, saline water coming out of my head, but that I felt emotionally connected to the material, whether there were tears or not, they loved it. And that was pressure I was putting on myself. And sometimes directors, will say that's sort of the kiss of death, right? They're like, I really would like it if there are tears.
You're like, sometimes I'm lucky when John and I have a fight at the end, and sometimes he spits all over my face. So
I think that
it looks like tears.
Right. So. If you work with a spitter, really, that's the best thing. If you could spit on yourself. No, but I would definitely, I had an actress friend who's like, oh, no, I just have Bengay. And I have to go upstage and the fumes of that. Yeah. Do you know
that
what I mean?
Once. It's those little crystals that the makeup artist will blow into your eyes.
Yeah.
And I decided to try it for this one scene. It was kind of a comic scene, but I was supposed to be hysterically crying because my daughter was going off to college. So she blew this and a crystal went into my eye. And not only did I had contacts in too. So I was blinded. I was just, it was...
You were crying and
and blind. I mean, I think it turned out pretty funny, but it was the most painful thing.
But I want to go back. There were a few very special, you talk about Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward. And then in your early career, you're working with Mike Nichols. So there were these kind of beautiful angels who found you and hired you.
And because of Naked Angels, that angel found me and Mike Nichols, because I was doing one of my favorite, at least in my mind, in your memory, things can be much greater than they were, or much better than they were. But it was such a wonderful time because it was this play called Fat Men in Skirts that Nikki Silver wrote and Joe Mantello directed. It was the start of my friendship with Joe. And I was cast in it alongside of Stanley Tucci and Marissa Tomei, who had just won her Oscar, and Matt McGrath. And I remember this one night, I came out and I start the play with a monologue to the audience. And my son and I have been in a terrible plane crash. When I'm on the beach and I pick up my high heel and I'm pouring sand out of my high heel. And my first line is, I loathe the beach. And I had this big monologue. And I came off stage and Stanley Tucci was there. And I was like, Stanley, what the fuck is going on out there? Nobody, I swear to God, nobody is listening to me. They're not. I don't know what's out there, what's going on, but that was like the worst I've ever before. And he said, I'll tell you later. I'm not going to tell you now. Don't tell you. We finished the play. And then out in the audience were Mike Nichols, Al Pacino, Ellen Barkin, Jackie O, John Kennedy.
Jesus Christ. Mother Teresa.
There were some more. I can't remember, but it was like literally they were all looking at Jackie Onassis. And I remember she left at intermission. And the last image is Matt McGrath sodomizing me, his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kid you not, she died 2 days later. And I always thought, oh my gosh, that was the last play she saw, and she left in the middle of it. But who did stay towards the to the end was Mike Nichols. And he wrote me the loveliest letter. He then cast me in a very small part in Wolf, gave me one of my first little movie roles. And then he gave me this part in Primary Colors. That role in Primary Colors and me doing that pratfall, which was great because I show up and right as we're 5 minutes before we're filming, he says, can you fall down this flight of stairs? And I was like, well, I think I can actually, because I did a production of Noises Off in New Jersey. And Bill Bowers was the actor and the stunt choreographer was teaching him how to fall down a flight of stairs. And I remember sitting in the audience watching like, oh, I can't wait to see how he teaches him how to fall down a flight of stairs. And I loved it. And I was like, talk about, you know, in that moment it came up and he said, gee, Allison, do you know how to fall down a flight of stairs? And I was like, why? As a matter of fact, I do. I thought you'd never ask. And I fell down that flight of stairs. And it was Mike's favorite thing. He loved it so much. He made me say, can you do another one? I said, sure. Another one. And it made him so happy. But I tell you, it was because of that that I know Aaron Sorkin.
Tell me about the West Wing audition.
Well, I believe that the reason why I was called in for that was because of Primary Colors and my performance in that. Because the pilot episode of West Wing, I fall off a treadmill. But my audition for that, I was out in L.A. I was doing American Beauty and Nurse Betty. I was doing those two movies at the same time. You know, small part, so it was easy to the scheduling. But in the middle of that, my agents call and say, we got you an audition for this pilot called The West Wing. And they told me who was involved. And I was like, gosh, that sounds kind of cool. And I remember just being completely walking out of that audition going, well, I am not getting that part. I felt like I stunk. They didn't ask me anything. They didn't give me any adjustments. They didn't, you know, so how are you doing? Or, you know, even talk to me to get to know me. I just did it. And they were like, okay, thanks. And I left. And I was like, okay, well, that didn't work. Then I got my call back. I was like, well, that's weird. Maybe they'll probably give me more stuff this time. And I did it again. Same thing happened. I was like, this is so weird. I feel so stinky when I leave. I don't know if they, I wish they'd tell me what they want if I'm not doing it right. And then I got to go do a test. I had to test for the network. And I kept thinking, well, this is just experience because I saw a lot of other actresses who were auditioning for the part of CJ who I knew. And I thought, well, they will probably get it, but this is great experience for me because I've never tested for a network before. I hadn't done much TV. So I just thought this is just experience, good to have under my belt. And then I don't remember that except for I think I stopped in the middle and started over. And because I always, someone said, just make sure you use the time. It's your time. If you want to stop yourself and start over, you do it. Take control. It's your time. It's not theirs. And then the next day I got a beautiful flower arrangement that came to my hotel room and then a phone call soon after that was Aaron Sorkin saying, well, I'm so excited to offer you this role. And, you know, and then the rest is.
Did you ever talk about their perception?
You know, why didn't I think about, I'd never asked them that. Can I call a friend?
Yeah. 310.
I'm going to ask Tommy because I don't see Aaron anymore. I never see him. I wish I did, but I don't ever see him. Tommy I see more often and I'm going to call him and ask him because I forgot. I don't know what
did
they
you
thought.
Know pretty quickly that was lightning in a bottle, as they say?
No, I didn't. I didn't think. I think most of us, everyone who was cast in that was all great theater actors mostly. I mean, John Spencer had done a lot of television, lovely John Spencer, and he had done L.A. Law and many other shows. And he was a veteran of television. But Richard Schiff and Brad Whitford and Janelle and myself, none of us had really done television before. And we thought it was great, but we thought no one's going to want to watch a show about politics. It was great working with you, great to get to meet you guys. And, you know, and then we found we got picked up and it never felt like an unqualified hit to us. And I never looked at ratings or what was going on. And so it always felt very cross our fingers. Hope we get picked up next year. We never sort of sat back and we're like, hey, we're on a big fat hit.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like that until after the fact. Now I feel like I was part of a big thing.
Back
then
really
it was scary, but I knew it was special when I was doing it. I had so many moments of, in the middle of a setup, just going, oh, I'm so lucky. This is so great. Look around. Remember this moment. This is so cool. Had a lot of those great moments. I also had a lot of moments of, I'm missing another family funeral, a wedding. I've missed weddings, funerals, so much stuff because of the time commitment was extraordinary. 18-hour days most of the time, like really exhausting hours. And, you know, boo-hoo, poor me. But it was, they call those jobs the golden handcuffs because they're fantastic, but at a price.
How many years was West Wing on the air?
7 seasons.
So now you are doing such a different kind of show with Mom. This is your first long-term commitment to a sitcom.
It's incredible. After having done all those hours on West Wing, and then I did a short-lived show called Mr. Sunshine with Matthew Perry, that was a single-camera comedy, and those hours were similar to West Wing.
So would you say a sitcom is like Golden Showers versus Golden Handcuffs? Like if you had, like, is that the difference?
Is it? Yes.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God, it's heaven. The work is really fun. It's 2 weeks on, 1 week off, at least our schedule. It's the most civilized schedule an actor could ever have.
So Mom, part of the joy of that show is that it allows people to laugh at what can be truly the most devastating thing that people go through, right? Which is to be in recovery or to not have made it through recovery. Are people talking to you about it? Do you get a lot of input from fans? Do you feel a responsibility beyond the show?
The fact that the show is about people in recovery was very meaningful to me when I read the script. And also just to go to an audition, because I don't have any funny audition stories. Let me tell you right now. There's not a one that's funny. They're all ended in tears.
Mm-hmm. Would they be funny to me?
I kept thinking, no, but this is an audition story.
Okay.
It's not a funny one.
Okay.
But it's fun. When you get to a certain point in your career, certain actors, sometimes you don't have to audition for things. And you think, that's I can't wait till I get to that point in my career. I don't have to audition. I just offer only.
Yeah.
And this came up and my agent said, well, they want you to audition, but we're going to tell them no. And I said, no, hold on. I kind of want to audition for it because not only because I wanted to be considered, but I didn't want to force them into offering me something. I thought, I want to see if I have chemistry with Anna, I want to go in there and meet her. And I understand their need to
see us together.
I'm not opposed. So, you know, my agents were trying to protect me and my whatever I had, you know, earned in my career that I didn't have to. And I was like, no. I'm going to go in and audition. And I think auditioning for something, while it's great to get offers, it sometimes puts more pressure on you to show up for that first day of work thinking, oh, my God, I've really got to be good because they offered it to me. And if I suck, they're going to be like, why did we go with that?
Yeah.
And so I went in and auditioned and had a great audition with Anna. And I wanted to do it because I, you know, having my brother Hal, I lost to alcohol and drugs. And so trying to get someone to want to recover when they don't want to is one of the most heartbreaking things on the planet. And getting to portray these women, you see them, you know, they're in recovery and you see them in the recovery rooms with these great relationships with these other great women characters on the show. And it just makes me feel proud to be doing that and showing it. And nothing means more to me than when I see people. And I was in some store downtown and walked in and this woman saw me and behind the register, she worked at the store and she just started crying. She said, I can't tell you how much the show means to me. I cannot tell you how much, you know, I'm in recovery. I've had 22 years and I just to see you guys laughing and enjoying and seeing people in recovery who have hope and laughter and you make me laugh at what I'm going through. And it's just, it makes me feel so proud. And
it's an extraordinary thing.
It is.
Is that the only thing you've auditioned for in like recent history? No, I mean, when I think about it, what else would you have auditioned for?
I know, I'm trying to think. I've had a lot of times they have meetings, take a meeting with Alice. I'm like, I hate those.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we going to talk about? Like, you know, it's like the elephant in the room is that they want you to read the, like, so I usually go into these meetings and go, do you want me to read this? And they're like, oh yeah, would you? We'd love it. And my agents
are
like,
script is right on the table.
Why did you say it? But meetings are weird, but I guess it's good to go and just meet and see, because I don't feel like I give good meeting or like, I just don't think anyone, I don't enjoy talking about a part.
How do you work on a character? Do you have a way to work or what's your process?
I always feel like, how do I do this again? I just read it and I read it and I read it and I start seeing where it sits in me. And I honestly don't know how to talk about what I do.
There's a line that I want you to say, and then I'm going to say something, and then you're going to say something back. And it goes a little something like this. Life has
dealt me another blow, but I don't mind.
What did you say, Mother?
I said that life had dealt me another blow, but that I didn't. Oh, shit. Let's do it again.
Okay.
Life has dealt me another blow, but I don't mind.
What did you say, Mother?
I said that life had dealt me another blow, but that I didn't mind. Oh, my God, I forgot that we did that.
That's it. Alice and Jenny.
Wait, just one more time.
Okay.
Life has dealt me another blow, but I don't mind.
What did you say, Mother?
I said that life had dealt me another blow, but that I didn't mind. That was better.
We're going to have all of them so they can understand your process.
Oh, my God.
In your
God.
Master class.
Oh, my God.
Listen, I just have to say and state for the record, I love you so much, my oldest and dearest friend. You walked me down the aisle at my wedding. You will walk me down the aisle at my funeral. You are just the greatest, greatest joy
you
in my life.
You are one of the most special people in my heart always. You fit in that pocket of my favorite places on this planet.
I love you. Thank you for being here.
Clouds can make the wind blow. Bugs can make the grass grow. So there you go. These are little known facts that now you know.
If you want more information about my guests, go to the website littleknownfactspodcast.com. I also wanted to tell you that there is now a new addition to the website. It is a button that says contributions. This podcast is a true labor of love, and I really, really want to keep doing it for a long time. So if you like listening as much as I love to do it, please feel free to contribute. It would mean the world to me. Also, on Twitter, you can find me at Alana Levine. Instagram is Little Known Facts Podcast. And on Facebook, Little Known Facts Podcast. You can also feel free to rate and review the show on the iTunes show page. This podcast is recorded at Hanger Studios in New York City. This episode was brought to you by Pro Media. Located in Times Square, Pro Media offers both production and post-production services out of its beautiful studios in the heart of New York City. Pro Media, sound vision. Find out more at promedia.nyc.